Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet closes its season with a trio of single-act ballets and a program titled Signature Series. The program includes Cincinnati Ballet resident choreographers Adam Hoagland's Cripple and the Starfish, Alexander Ekman's Cacti, and the first major success of my guest today, British choreographer David Dawson's A Million Kisses to My Skin. David Dawson is my guest today. He's considered one of the most innovative dance makers in classical ballet today. Former dancer with English National Ballet, Dutch National Ballet, and Ballet Frankfurt, he began solely choreographing in 2002 and served as resident choreographer at Semperoper Ballet in Dresden, Royal Ballet of Flanders, and for many years at Dutch National Ballet, where he remains an associate artist today. He's created new full lengths of such classical favorites as Giselle, Swan Lake, and Tristan and Isolde, all choreographed in his signature style. His work is a part of the repertoire of some of the world's greatest companies, from the Mariinsky Ballet in Russia, where he was the first British choreographer to create work for this historic company, to Pacific Northwest Ballet in Seattle, site of his most recent premiere, Empire Noir. He's in Tulsa to put the finishing touches on his A Million Kisses to My Skin as a part of the Signature Series, which takes place this Thursday through Sunday at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the University of Tulsa campus, the finale to Tulsa Ballet's 60th anniversary season. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. David Dawson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
You're bringing your ballet A Million Kisses to My Skin to Tulsa. This particular ballet, it was a special piece when you created it because it was sort of marking a transition from dancer to choreographer.
Tell us
about the origins of this piece.
Well, I was very interested in creating work for myself at a young age. And I was given the opportunity, actually, by my director at the time to create a new ballet for a Bach festival. And everything kind of snowballed from there. The piece became what it became. I was transitioning. I was thinking about stopping dancing because trying to do both was very difficult, to perform and to create at the same time. I felt that that was a bit too much for me. Million Kisses was the only ballet that I made while I was a dancer, and I actually performed another ballet during the premiere. So I remember A Million Kisses was the first ballet on the program, and then I had to dance a ballet by William Forsythe afterwards called Artifact. So I had to have kind of two heads on at the same time. Since then, though, I've been able to focus on creating my work for myself, and and that takes up all of my time.
And the title comes from this feeling that a dancer gets from time to time.
It's a feeling you hope
to get. I think any performing artist has from time to time, I think.
It's that magical feeling when everything comes together and you're really there in the moment and everything's working, and I think it's what every artist really lives for, that magic moment.
I've likened it to sort of an electrical charge going through you. You know, it's almost like goosebumps at every part of your body, but and it's this weird feeling.
Yeah, it's kind of an out-of-body experience. You can almost see yourself from outside, you know?
And how common is that in your own case?
In my case, it was rare. I mean, because there are so many things to think about while you're performing, so many things that come in the way of that happening, reality. Even from the moment you wake up in the morning of the performance, and all the things that happen before you reach the stage can get in the way of making that feeling not happen. So it's really a case of a choice, you know, your mind deciding for you that that is where I'm going to go, that is what I'm going to be, and that is how I'm going to feel. So it's a discipline in itself to be able to turn that on. I often talk to the dancers about how actors do their take for a movie, that they have to turn on their character immediately and not allow those things to get in the way. So it's a discipline, it's something you learn, but to focus on that for a whole ballet, that is the only feeling, is not often something people get to do.
You'll have a brief moment where you're being carried away, but then something gets in a way. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and dancers are very self-critical. So even during a performance, they're thinking, oh, that didn't work, or that didn't work. So I tried.
And it worked. It probably worked, but not to their standard. Mm-hmm.
Or for that
standard.
Feeling that we're actually trying to achieve. So to have that as a focus, to have that joy as a focus, to be able to communicate that to the public is something very singular. It's not something, it's a shared feeling that I want the dancers to be able to express to their audience so that the whole theater is feeling that same feeling.
So this piece came about from a commission to do a piece for a Bach festival, and you chose the Bach Keyboard Concerto No. 1. What was special about that particular piece of music?
Well, I was 27 at the time, and I was just so hungry to learn. So I actually listened to a massive amount of music by Bach for this piece. But the piano concerto really just kind of struck a chord with me, and I felt connected to it. I particularly loved the first movement. It felt very dark and exciting at the same time. There's an energy in it that that was so danceable to me. And I remember when I heard it for the first time, I just immediately thought of every single moment that was going to happen. So it happened very naturally.
So you had one of these choreographic moments we're talking about.
Yes,
dancing on.
Yes, maybe, in a way, yes. But that is something that you try to learn to trust when you're creating, that if it doesn't come naturally or if it's too difficult to find, there's something wrong with that for me, because, you know, I believe in things like the golden ratio and, you know, the Fibonacci code, and so things should come naturally, like nature, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes, of course, there are difficult moments, and sometimes you have to push further to find something else, but there should also be a joy in that, too, and that's something to try and find all the time.
Yeah. Now, you did this ballet, you created this ballet right around the year 2000, right?
Yes.
Was that in mind at all, you know, this millennium change?
Not really.
No?
No.
Well, because the piece, you start out in classical language and you develop start with a traditional classical language, correct?
Well, no, the whole piece is basically an extended classicism of mm-hmm. the body. And therefore, over the years since then, I've been able to develop my own kind of style, overextended positioning of the body, super stretched, very risky, kind of off-balance behavior, things that feel exciting to do and therefore hopefully exciting to also watch. It was purely about this feeling of being more than yourself, you know, and also dancers dream of this moment. I mean, we all choose to become dancers very, very young. It's a very strange thing. You know, at the age of 7 or 8, you decide that that's what you want to do. And if you're lucky enough to be able to fulfill that dream, then you become a professional dancer. And I wanted that dream to continue for the professional dancer. It's a hard job. So, you know, if you're doing, I don't know, maybe 100 performances a year, it can sometimes feel like work. And so I wanted to make sure everybody remembered that it's a privilege and a joy to be able to be a dancer and to remember that feeling so that when the audience watched them, they feel this too.
Hmm. Now, this, as you mentioned, this came at the sort of the end of your dancing career. Were you aware of that as you were creating the ballet? Did that sort of enter into your thinking as you were creating it, or was that just a natural evolution?
It was a bit of a love letter to my career. It was a way of encapsulating everything I'd learned as a dancer, in a way, for myself, to be able to say, okay, what have I learned, and how can I sort of quantify that, you know? And that is sort of evident in the piece. There is a very classical structure to it. It's a concerto, so you have the three movements.
Right.
I knew I was going to stop dancing. It was a matter of time. And I was putting a certain period of my life behind me and moving forward. So it was kind of like a bridge.
Now, you said you were 27 when you created this?
Yes.
Well, that's still in the prime of a dancer's life. Was it just the fact that choreography had just sort of created a fire in you, that was what you knew what you had to do?
Yes, exactly.
When did that bug bite?
Well, I started choreographing when I was around 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Small works, practice works, learning the craft. I had great teachers at the Royal Ballet School, Norman Morris, David Drew, and there was a choreographic course mm-hmm. that we all did. I was exposed to it very young. Also, in the Royal Ballet at that time, Kenneth McMillan was still alive, so we could see great masters at work.
But as you mentioned, all the dancers take that course, and not all dancers become choreographers.
No.
So you mentioned a dancer knows at 6 or 7 that he wants to dance. Was it the same thing at 15 or 16 when you started doing this choreography? You knew you wanted to create work?
Well, I mean, the act of being creative already is
right.
Just so exciting. But I think as dancers, we all, it's a lot of focus to be a dancer. You have to really, really have a discipline, and that takes up a lot of your energy and your brain space. So you don't necessarily have the time to think about taking on board the responsibility of making a whole ballet yourself. But I enjoyed being able to have some control. And actually, I felt more free when I was choreographing than I did as a dancer.
Did you choreograph for yourself, or were you always choreographing for others?
Choreographed always on other people. I didn't ever divulge in that kind of I don't know how
it's
to
kind
say
of
that.
Auteurism, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
It sounds like you sense that that's a sort of a sense of superego.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I always wanted other people to realize their dreams. Maybe that sounds a bit romantic
corny.
Or something, but that was the point, and how always has been, in a sense, you know, that you train and train and study and study, and I want that to have some kind of result for the dancer, for the spirit of the dancer, for everything they've learned, and to be able to share that with their public. The public knows immediately when a dancer is happy on stage, and then they're happy too, and that's a great thing.
Yeah. This was not the first ballet you created, but it was probably the first big success. Coming back to it now, what is it, 17 years later, what's that feeling like? Because, I mean, obviously you've evolved since 2000 as far as your own. I've seen some of your more recent work. I'm sure it's evolved.
Mm. I mean, Million Kisses has been in my life every year since its creation.
Because you've done it somewhere.
Yeah, somebody's been performing it somewhere.
Do you think it's changed? Has it evolved a little bit over that 17
years?
Yeah,
I've had to be able to look at it in terms of how the movements connect and, how it can be part of a group of works. So, I mean, it's a great, great thing to have the opportunity to go back to a work. Of course, sometimes you think, that's who I was then, and that's not who I am now. But that's also wonderful, too, at the same time. You can see your own evolution.
Some choreographers love to tinker with it and sort of,
well,
you know,
you
I mean, never
do,
get,
yeah.
Yeah, you never get to a final version. But it sounds like you're sort of satisfied where the piece was, and you may tinker with the edges or, you know, trim an edge here or two, but nothing major.
A ballet is a living thing. Hmm? So it's every dancer who dances it brings something new to it. And I believe that that's how ballets really become stronger. Each piece becomes stronger because the dancers interpret the steps for themselves, and then it becomes more real in a way. It's not like a first, like a premiere, like a brand new ballet. That's really like fresh paint, you know. It's the dancers that create the ballet in the end, over a period of time.
My guest today is choreographer David Dawson. He had a long affiliation with Dutch National Ballet, still an affiliate artist with that company, but it sounds like you're doing work all around the world these days. Tulsa Ballet will be presenting his work as a part of a triple bill featuring A Million Kisses to My Skin by Dawson, along with Alexander Ekman's Cocktie and Adam Hoagland's Cripple and the Starfish, a triple bill of Marcello Angelini's favorites. Now, has Marcello ever danced? Did he ever dance this?
No.
This is well after he finished dancing. But how's it his favorite? Has this ever been presented here before?
No, this is the first time it's going to be in Tulsa.
Yeah?
He's seen it before, and mm-hmm. I think he fell in love with it when he saw it. So it was something he wanted the company to dance and for the audiences here in Tulsa to see.
Well, we look forward to that particular piece. From looking at pictures of your choreography and seeing some short clips, what really comes out is, you mentioned this earlier, this super stretching that is a part of your dance vocabulary. And it looks like, I mean, it's almost like one of those little spongy toys where you grab the arms and just stretch them as far as you can. Where did that technique come from? What was the inspiration for that? Do you even know?
I just really like dancers to dance big.
Uh-huh.
I often say to them, I need to see it from space. So it's about exploring the space they're in. The stage is like this box, a picture box, and I like them to explore every inch of the stage. I like them to move the air so that it's alive, so that everything's alive, like a living painting. So that's an evolution of that idea, to cover as much space as possible.
So the arms are as far out as like they can go. The legs are spread as far as they can go.
The Vitruvian Man, you know, the Da Vinci Vitruvian Man is covering all the circle in the square, as I say. So, it's about being big, free, it's freedom, you know, dancing as big as possible and finding a zone in your physicality where you disappear in a way from your fears disappear and all that's left is this emotion.
And again, there's also a lot of work that's looks off balance, sort of. Is that again this idea of finding freedom on the stage?
It's about the off-balance idea comes from connecting steps. So instead of doing one step after another, so creating a kind of ABCD version of dancing, which is how we're trained, you know, it's like position after position after position. I try to connect those positions so that they become dancing for me, so that the positions aren't necessarily the most important things, but how you get from position to position. So I often say to the dancers that every step is a preparation for the next step. So they're constantly in a state of becoming something. So they're finding shape and color and music all together. And this idea of off balance helps them to be able to connect one movement to another in a way that they can naturally fall or catch themselves and bounce, jump, you know. So it's It's
so it's a matter of sort of removing the steps. The steps are there, but removing the steps from the process.
In a sense,
so,
yes.
So you don't see this ting, 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 or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You see 2, 8. You
know? A phrase.
Right.
You know, if you sing an aria, you don't
hear
just
the note.
Sing each note. Yeah.
Right.
You it turns into a phrase, and then that becomes, and then they have their the text inside of that, so that becomes something more. And I would try to do that with dancing all the time.
Yeah. My guest today is David Dawson, a choreographer who is presenting his A Million Kisses to My Skin with Tulsa Ballet as a part of a triple bill called the Signature Series. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Now, last year, you took on the big 900-foot elephant, if you will, and that would be Swan Lake.
That's right.
And many choreographers do Swan Lake, but they leave the Swan Lake romantic classical structure in place. I don't think you did that with your Swan Lake, did you?
Well, it was a challenge, that's for sure. And I was not convinced that it was something I wanted to do when I was asked to make it. But
this is for Scottish National Ballet.
Yes. It has been done in many different ways by many great choreographers. And I had to really think about what I could bring new to it. For me, Swan Lake was always an example, the highest example of classical ballet at its most beautiful. So then it became, to me, about choreography itself. Then at the same time, it became about Siegfried and his first love story. So, and my Odette was not under any spell. She wasn't in the control of an evil sorcerer. She was a goddess in her own right and had her own choices and decided for herself to go on this journey with Siegfried, even though he makes a mistake of betraying her, and the trust is gone in that relationship. So it became the story about a young man's first love, and that's how I approached it. I also kept the four acts, and it was a big company piece. But it was very exciting to make, and to be working with Tchaikovsky's music was also every day just wonderful. So, it's an experience I really treasure.
Now, I know you've worked with the classical composers before, but that music has so much dance baggage with it. I mean, it's not baggage so much as it's just this. Most people say, "I'm not going to touch that." You know, what's there is good. I'll create, you know, the stuff to go around Petipa's choreography.
Mm-hmm.
But did you jettison all of?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it's a black and white decision for me. You know, it's like either all the way or not at all. So I'm not a producer in that sense to make a version of Petipa's original. And that's not what I was asked to do. The director really wanted something new, and he'd seen my Giselle and my Tristan and Isolde, and that's why he asked me to make it for his company. It's a company that really liked to push the boundaries of traditional ballet. So it's all there, but it's there in a completely different way.
Now, your Tristan does not use Wagner, right?
No.
It was a new score.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of working with young composers, and I feel if I have an opportunity to create, I want to give opportunity to other people too. So I've been working with Shimon Broshka on this piece. That was also a very big piece.
But I would think that without Wagner's music, there's not any of that 19th century baggage with the story.
Well, Wagner, I mean, I always said, if we had used the Wagner, then how would we use the Wagner? And that would mean maybe chopping it up and rearranging it. And, you know, that's somebody else's work. That's you know, I really respect all artists' work. It's really hard to to make anything. It would be like taking the Mona Lisa, cutting it up into little pieces, and then rearranging it in some other way, which would be great too. That's a wonderful thing. But it wasn't the direction I wanted to go in. We talked a lot, the composer and I, together about how big the Wagner was, about all of the things that create the Tristan and Isolde of Wagner, the motif, sounds of, that are in there for each character, the great love themes, the Tristan chord.
Right. So
there are elements in there that have inspired this score.
But it's a completely different
score. But it's
score.
A completely new score, yeah. Yes.
So you have a couple of big premieres coming up, and you've just gone through a whole spate of premieres. What's it like to have a 6-month period where you're doing 3-4 premieres within that amount of time?
Well, it's very challenging. I have to be very organized. Otherwise, I can't really function. So I'm quite known to be quite organized person. that helps me be able to approach each thing in the best way I can, and to be able to explore myself as an artist. So rather than get bogged down with everything and stressed out, I find it much more helpful to really know what I'm going to do and be prepared for each piece that I'm going to make.
All right. Well, I understand the next big piece is a Four Seasons, which uses Vivaldi's music as well as a new score, correct?
Well, it's the Max Richter
composed
version of the Vivaldi. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. It really opens the whole piece up again. It's like a bridge to the past. I love it. It's a beautiful piece.
When is that due to premiere?
That's premiering in March.
Of next year?
Next year.
Mm-hmm. So you're working out a year or two in advance.
Yeah. In fact, I actually create my new piece in San Francisco in September this year.
Mm.
So that premieres in April next year, but I make it in September this year. So it's a kind of a bit of a juggling act to make sure that, you know, I'm ready for each and every piece.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with those, and we look forward to seeing A Million Kisses to My Skin.
Thank you.
David, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
English choreographer David Dawson speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Tulsa Ballet will present his A Million Kisses to My Skin as a part of a triple bill titled Signature Series, which will also include Alexander Ekman's Cacti and Adam Hoagland's Cripple and the Starfish. There are 6 performances scheduled this Thursday through Sunday at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the University of Tulsa campus. For details, visit tulsaballet.org or call the box office at 918-749-6006. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.